You are listening to Fanther Tracks.
Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
Time to get all your Star Wars news in a single file. This is Making Tracks. Here are your hosts, Mark Newbold and Mark Mulcaster.
That's not true. That's impossible.
This is episode 38 of Making Tracks, brought to you by the lovely folk at fanfortracks.com. I'm your co-host, Mark Mulcaster, and joining me today, as always, is Mr. Mark Newbold. Mark, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How's your week in Star Wars been? Have you been up to much?
As ever, the week has gone like that. It's just gone ridiculously fast, as these days seem to currently, blurring into one. Is it Wednesday? Is it Sunday? I've got no idea. Is it May? Is it April? I don't know. But yeah, loads of Star Wars news. Obviously, we're going to tuck into it in a minute. We've got Mandalorian Season 2, rumours of casting, different people coming in there. We'll have a little word about the virtual museum at Rancho Obi-Wan that's just been announced. We'll talk a bit about Disney Gallery Episode 3. Yeah, loads to talk about.
Cool. So what do you want to start with? Some Mando rumours?
I reckon Mando rumours is a good place to start. Katie Sackhoff, of course, we know her as Bo-Katan already in Clone Wars and Rebels, but there's a very cool rumour come out that she'll be reprising that role in live action. What are your thoughts on that to kick it off?
She filmed just before the lockdown was put in place in February, yeah. From what I understand. My working theory at the moment is that may be who we see at the end of Chapter 5 of Season 1.
That's a good shout.
That's my little kind of spitball moment right there, I think.
Yeah, why not? I mean, Mando armour. Makes sense. I mean, I know a lot of people were like, you know, is it Fett? Obviously, Fett's the big rumour. And some people said Cad Bane. I'd love to see Cad Bane.
That would be awesome.
I think that'd be wicked. But yeah, if that was Bo-Katan, that would be really cool, actually.
I don't know. There's something about the whole Boba Fett rumour, and possibly I'm wrong, and we can look back in, I don't know, middle of November, hopefully, and we can say either if I was close or if I was wrong about it. But I just figure out Boba Fett may just have a completely different kind of entrance. Whereas I think maybe Bo-Katan is quite a cool character. I don't think necessarily those who don't know the Clone Wars and Rebels and that will have a tough time getting to grips with the character. I think it will be quite fun. And I think it's always going to be really fun and quite cool just to have more animation characters make that transition from animation over to live action.
If you're a Star Wars fan, I've been reading recently that the number one streaming show in the world right now is Clone Wars, followed by The Mandalorian, and then I think it's Stranger Things is still crazy high. Tiger King has completely disappeared. No surprise there.
No.
But you can introduce characters from animation, and you don't have to. There's this sort of locked-in thinking that people are going, well, nobody will know who they are. Yeah, nobody would know who they were if they were a completely new and original character. So why is it a problem if they're a pre-existing character from somewhere else? If you want to go and learn the history of Bo-Katan, there it is. But if it's a brand new character, you're going to absorb it and learn it anyway. So I don't get the logic of people not getting or worrying that it's an animated character because, well, wow, how many episodes of Clone Wars and Rebels was Bo-Katan in? She was in quite a few. So there's a lovely little delicious history to go and learn there. If you want to, if you don't, just take the character as it comes.
That's it. I think you've hit the nail completely on the head there. I suppose what it does is it allows for that kind of Star Wars synergy and brand synergy. So, okay, so if you want to find out more about Bo-Katan, check out Clone Wars, check out season 4 or season 3 of Star Wars Rebels. And that's kind of what you want. And that's going to be how you keep your Clone Wars and your series like The Mandalorian, the most watched streaming episodes and series, when they're not releasing new content. Because let's be fair, like I said, look at Stranger Things. They haven't had a new series out since, was it October? So it would be curious now to actually see where The Mandalorian is in that chart, how far it has or hasn't dropped down.
Still very high. They're working out on impressions, and I think they said Clone Wars was 67 million impressions and Mando was second with 62.5. So still insane numbers. And obviously Disney Gallery's not hurting that either. That's definitely helping.
Exactly. It's kind of what I said last week. It's very much, it's a supportive program. I think most people would probably watch it after they've watched The Mandalorian, but there may be a couple of people who may have checked out the gallery first and then gone, oh, well, actually, hang a sec, I need to check out The Mandalorian. It's all reciprocal.
The other rumour, Timothy Olyphant, people will know him from Justified, from Santa Clarita Diet, going back a bit from Deadwood. Which is an awesome show. And funny enough, Deadwood, I think, was one of the influences on Star Wars Underworld, wasn't it, back in the day?
Yeah,
that
very
the,
much.
The thing that Rip McCullum kept saying, wasn't it?
Yes, that real, raw, gritty kind of Western, which actually, to be fair, but probably quite complimentary to The Mandalorian.
I wonder what sort of character he's going to come in as, because he's one of those actors, he turned up in The Good Place right near the end, and it was just like, how cool. You know, he's just one of those faces that turns up in films and TV series, and he's pretty much always elevates it. What sort of a character do you think you might see from him?
Maybe because I kind of remember him from Deadwood, it might be quite cool to see him in more of that kind of Western kind of style, perhaps.
Sheriff sort of.
Yeah, like. Sheriff or something like that. That would be quite cool. I mean, he's a good, versatile actor, so he could probably play a number of different kind of roles. And also, you look at how crazy Santa Clarita Diet was. The acting was almost kind of melodramatic in its kind of inception. So he's a similar actor to all the other comedian actors they've had from Saturday Night Live and that, in that respect. So I'm sure he could probably fit in to quite a unique kind of character anyway.
You could see him in that sort of role, but he's versatile enough that if he turned up as a, I don't know, a New Republic politician or a gunslinger, kind of feels like it would sort of fit as well. He's got that kind of, he's got that cockiness about him, but more so as he's got older, weirdly enough, it sort of feels more part of his character. So great news. Obviously neither have been confirmed. Lucasfilm haven't, or Disney haven't said a peep about either, but we both agree if it was confirmed, we'd both be pretty darn happy.
Hi, this is Vanessa Marshall, and you're listening to Fantha Tracks.
So on the last episode of Making Tracks, episode 37, we never had time because there's been so much news, Boba Fett news, Tamira Morrison, Taika Waititi, all sorts of stuff going on. We never got to the listener's question, and we do appreciate you sending them in. So we're going to bring you our listener's question for the week. This came from Tony from Hull, and I'm going to read out the whole question, and then I'm going to put it to you, Mark. You're answering this one first. So the question was, hi, Eminem. So we're Eminem now. So hi, Eminem. Firstly, can I say a big thank you for all the content you've been providing over the last few weeks. The amount of stuff coming from Fantha Tracks as a whole has been awesome. So that's lovely to hear. I'm really enjoying the new lineup to Making Tracks and thought it might be fun to hear you chaps discuss what you consider the good, the bad, and the downright ugly changes that have been made to the original trilogy over the years. Keep up the good work. Tony from Hull. That is a big question.
Yeah, that's no small question. That's not a yes or no answer, really, is it?
It really isn't a yes or no answer. And really, if you were going to be finickety about it, you could break it down into so many bits. But I will throw the general question at you, and you can answer it however you like.
Fine.
What do you consider to be the good, the bad, and the downright ugly changes that have been made to the original trilogy? And I would assume he's talking specifically, or generally, I would say, he's talking about the special edition changes.
Yeah, well, I suppose that's the thing, because actually there's been changes made since the special edition. Now, obviously, the special edition was the watershed moment when George made those changes, or additions, I should say. And, I mean, it's interesting because just from a kind of historical, like, my own perspective, it was the first time I was able to see the original trilogy in the cinema. So that was obviously a big deal for me. I was 15, 16 at the time, I think, something like that. I'd only seen it on VHS. So it was kind of, it was a big deal just to see it in the cinema. And they, I can remember them making a lot of kind of like emphasis on, like, you know, adding the new stuff in. If we were to take it each film at a time, I think the good for A New Hope is two. I really like the extended Jubak scene and also the extended scene with Biggs, because that was slightly extended, wasn't it? In the hangar.
It was.
Yeah.
It was.
Because to be fair, I can remember even kind of when I first saw it and before that, I was just like, there's this weird dude who kind of comes out, you know, out of a hangar and kind of like shouts at Luke, hey, Luke. But you had no real idea of who he was. And so I think that helped. The bad, and this is me with my editorial hat on to an extent, and everybody's welcome to come at me for any of this, because, you know, some people will think what I think is good is actually a bad change and what I think is a bad change is a good change. But I feel like if you look at A New Hope as a standalone film first, I think the Jabba the Hutt extended scene doesn't offer anything more to the story than what we get from the Greedo scene. in the cantina.
Yeah.
But obviously, George was looking at the bigger picture, and actually what it does is it kind of sets up Return of the Jedi. It adds a little bit more weight, no pun intended, Jabba, to the fact that Han has this business arrangement with Jabba, and obviously he goes back on it. It also adds a little bit more emphasis to the Han Solo character for when you see him with the money at the end of the film, just before they're about to go into the Battle of Yavin, and he's like, I'm taking the money, I've got to pay off my debts. But then obviously he rescues and he helps Luke in the battle right at the end. So for me, that's the bad. The ugly, I think that came from the later Blu-ray release, and it's a double header, I'm afraid. It's the first time I mention audio, and that is the Krayt Dragon call in the latest version, I think, is just really bad. I think the version that they did for Special Edition wasn't particularly great, and I quite liked the original. It was one of those things that didn't really have any massive force on it either way, but seeing what they've done since then, it just sounds pretty awful. But the worst part for me, I think, is CG compositing the rocks in front of R2, which is such a small little thing. In the grand scheme of thought processes, it's such a literal kind of change that you see R2's tucked away in the rocks, the Tuskens come and grab Luke and drag him to the land speeder, and obviously you see Obi-Wan come out and all that kind of stuff. You don't need to be hiding back there, but it's just like partly the execution of the compositing doesn't quite work, and also it's kind of like I just can't see any way how R2 could have actually maneuvered himself into that space now, because of the rock outcropping is kind of encroaching on too much of the screen. It's kind of like it's too literal, and I just don't think it really needed to be. So that's my choice for A New Hope anyway. What about yours?
The tweak to the Sandcrawler scenes, the way they shot the Sandcrawler was gorgeous. Ben's hut looked great. Not that it didn't look good before, but I like Ben's hut. The Cantina editions were good. Didn't mind those so much. I totally agree with you on the Jabba scene, and I've often wondered, I mean, they redid it for the Blu-rays, and I've often thought, why haven't they gone back and done something, especially now when technology means that, you know, they could do a tweak where, okay, they have Han walking around and standing on Jabba's tail, and it's like, what you know Jabba from Jedi, apart from the fact it's only 3 years later, Jabba's way smaller, and yet we know Jabba's, you know, hundreds of years old, so there's, you know, there's, why would he suddenly shrink or get bigger? That doesn't make any sense. The CG on both is just really not good compared to what you can do now. You look at the CG on Jabba in Phantom Menace, and he looks phenomenal. I think that's the nearest they've ever got to making him look like he did in
Jedi.
Didn't
they update for the CG on the Blu-rays?
Yeah, it didn't look any better than, I mean, the original one with like the cat's eyes and changing the eyes just looked bleh. It was very sort of like the mask kind CG. But that was the level of CG technology at the time. Totally of the era. And that's the problem with adding CG additions, is that the models, the physical models, don't age that badly. CG ages badly. Our eyes are so... I've weirdly got used to it. You know, with models, it's generally just getting rid of matte lines and garbage mats and stuff. But CG, old CG, doesn't age so well. So, yeah, the Jabba scene, I think if you did it now, they wouldn't have Han walk around. They'd just get a body double and keep Harrison Ford's face and keep him stood in front of Jabba. Jabba would be the size he is in Jedi, i.e. way bigger, so they could just alter the eye line. And you know that they could comfortably do that now.
Do something
with
a little bit different, The main issue is that there's more changes made to A New Hope than any of the other two films, I think, combined. Depending on if you listen to the 70mm print version or the 35mm print version, there's different audio lines and stuff like that.
You hear more lines from 3PO.
Yeah, exactly. That's harder and more subjective to kind of look at. But I think anything that starts to detract from the scene, or anything that detracts from the flow of a film, is possibly not necessarily a positive change. I mean, every change can be completely justified if explained by Lucasfilm or by somebody who knows what they're talking about. But really, if it has to be explained, then it's probably not really working in the first place.
Yeah, that's it. And with CG as well, you know, it's an old conversation, isn't it? You know, the limitations of the technology helped make Star Wars what it was. Like, it helped Jaws, it helped Alien. That era of films had to be creative to get across what they needed to get across. And the more technology moved on, one, it's an amazing tool, you know, Jurassic made Phantom Menace possible, sort of thing. But sometimes the limitations help as opposed to hinder. You're in that sort of post Forrest Gump era when they were really manipulating historical footage. You were in that sort of gap between that and Phantom Menace when it really stepped up. So, yeah, he could do things that he wanted to do, like the Jabba scene. But really, like you say, the way the film's edited on the original Star Wars, it meant that you didn't need the Jabba scene. Like you just said it, you know, the Greedo scene tells you everything you need to know about Jabba. Yeah. You don't need to see Jabba. That was the big reveal. And it was also the start of a thing in Star Wars that happened in Rebels and happened a lot with other sort of medias, is that when Jedi came out as kids, Jedi came out and it was like, oh, we've got A-wings now. Oh, we've got B-wings now. Oh, we've got TIE Interceptors now. And these were all new ships. These were new vehicles that you'd never seen before. So as a kid, you're thinking, oh, well, they had TIE fighters in Star Wars and they had TIE bombers in Empire, but now they've got TIE Interceptors and they're really cool. Oh, they had X-Wings in Star Wars and they're Snowspeeders in Empire, but now they've got A-Wings and they're really cool and fast. As the years have gone on, you learn in Rebels that, oh, B-Wings have been around for a while and A-Wings have been around forever. And to me, the logic is, that's all well and good. If you had A-Wings at the time of Star Wars on Yavin, you wouldn't send an X-Wing down the trench. You'd send an A-Wing down the trench because it was way faster. It was smaller. TIE fighters wouldn't have been able to keep up with an A-Wing. So by the same logic, they're probably saying that you had TIE Interceptors at the time of Star Wars. Well, why didn't the Death Star send that TIE Interceptors after them instead of... They always used to say that Vader's...
X-1,
you know, was the prototype interceptor.
Yeah, TIE advanced, yeah.
So in terms of these additions, seeing the Outrider was a great little Easter egg and stuff like that was fun. The Praxis explosion on the Death Star blowing up at the end was fine because that kind of made sense. Yeah. You know, the shockwave, that made sense. I didn't mind that. And even the additions to the battle, you know, there's certain additions to the battle which they used in the trailer, which just looked cool as anything, you know, with the camera moving around with the X-Wing and the TIE fighter bobbing and waving. I loved all of that.
That was more dynamic. So, yeah. You know, and you can kind of understand that because that's something that's very easy to, well, not easy, but it's very an easy kind of addition because actually it doesn't date at all, really. I mean, it clearly the intention, but the stop motion wasn't really quite there. Well, the motion control wasn't right there. To be able to probably pull off those shots exactly in the same kind of way. So, like you said, that is the whole kind of question. It's like, you know, it's a film of its time, so do you need to update it? And I think nowadays, if we look at stuff like Game of Thrones and even the Marvel Cinematic Universe, you could get away quite easily with just a reference to a character like Greedo and Han talking about Jabba, and then that character appear in like four films' time. You wouldn't necessarily need to put in that explanation, that scene between Han and Jabba. You know, I think we're now a lot more keyed up and aware that actually filmmakers can put in these kind of little Easter eggs and kind of foreshadowing characters and that because they know that subsequent films are going to be made. Obviously, with Star Wars, it was a bit of a gamble, really, if anything was going to come of it once it was finished.
Hey, man, it's me, Kevin Smith, Star Wars fan, Fantatrax fan.
With the coronavirus roaring across the planet and stopping events and stopping gatherings and people getting together, we can't physically get together in one place. And so the Rancho Obi-Wan Gala that was taking place in June has now been postponed to 2021. But the team over there have got busy and have formalised and announced something that they've been working on for a long time. It's the Rancho Obi-Wan Virtual Museum. So basically, you can go to RanchoObiWan.org and go through the list of options and levels of membership, which corresponds to the amount of access that you get to the virtual museum. So you can go in as a basic member and just browse and see what's in there, but also you can go right up to paying various amounts every month and giving more access where you can speak to Steve and go on virtual tours, and there's all sorts of crazy stuff and very worthwhile. And we're actually speaking to Steve on the next episode of the show, which will be out a week today. So Steve will walk you through the virtual museum and tell you what it's all about and how you can sign up for this subscription service. Briefly, before we move on to the next topic, Mark, have you ever signed up to Rancho Obi-Wan? Is it something you've ever done?
In fairness, because I've not really had much of a chance to get out to Rancho, but literally, as you've been talking, I have just signed up. I've just subscribed.
Wow, okay.
There you go. So I've done that.
I am now an official Rancho recruiter. Oh, yeah, there you go. About that.
So you should get your 5% from Steve. but in fairness, I've donated money to them in the past for various things, and also through the Rebel Legion, we tend to donate any patches and stuff like that we produce. We tend to always keep stuff aside for Rancho, and then we get them to Rancho one way or another. Normally, it's we drop them off at Celebration and go, here you go, here's a a year's worth of patches and stuff. But this is a great opportunity, I think, for everybody who won't be able to possibly get out to the actual physical Rancho to see it. So I'm quite looking forward to seeing what Steve's going to offer us.
I'm very lucky. I've been a few times, and it's an amazing tour. But we said this when we did the special episode for Farthest From 22 Live, when we were talking about our own collections. It's great having a collection. It's fantastic having all this stuff. It's, you know, you're a Star Wars fan, and that's how you show it. But if there's not a story, it's not so interesting. And the big pull for me, and I'm signing up to this, completely signing up to this, is to hear Steve tell those stories about how he got little figures from Japan or his fan-made figures from wherever, you know, anything. You can walk around with him and you point at anything and go, oh, that's cool. Oh, yeah, that was given to me by a collector in 1982 or whatever it might be. You know, there's always a story. So for me, the big pull about this is the fact that you hear the guy himself tell you the story about the, and he's such a compelling guy anyway. The way he tells stories is always interesting. And also, I'm really pleased he's just signed up to that, because I was one of the sort of charter members. So I've been in there for a good few years. And having been an old Star Wars fan club member way back in the day, when you'd get the big rolled up tube with the poster and the pictures and the badges and the patches and all the stuff they used to send, which I still kind of get a buzz about. It's one of the few sort of fan clubs where they actually send you stuff out, so you get your package. Now you've signed up, you'll get your pin, you'll get your patch, you'll get your sort of folder pack with a special card and a message from Rancho and just explaining what they do. It's well worth it. It's well worth it. And you've got to be a Rancho Obi-Wan member to go on the tour. And of course, tours aren't happening at the moment because of what's going on in the world. But when this all hopefully gets sorted out, we can all start going back to Rancho and doing the tours and stuff. Well worth it. So yeah, good choice there, Mark. One thing before we move on, the one great thing about going to Rancho, apart from the fact he's awesome and the team are great, and it's just a lovely part of the world, and you're not that, 45 minutes from Presidio as well, so you're not that far from Lucasfilm and Skywalker Ranch. It's a great part of the world to be. The best thing about going to Rancho is that it makes you realise really you don't have a collecting problem.
That's reassuring. So Steve's probably like the ultimate enabler.
I'd never thought of him in that way. That's a t-shirt that needs to be made.
Definitely.
Hi, this is Neil Scanlan. You're listening to Panther Tracks.
Empire Strikes Back. So the good, the bad, and the ugly. Good.
I think, and to be honest, I didn't actually kind of really think about this one too much. I really dislike the expanded environments for Cloud City. They just opened up the corridors a little bit more and stuff like that. To me, I don't think there's a huge amount added to Empire Strikes Back that was needed. And there was quite a few changes that were kind of like, not too sure about that. So if we move into the bad, I think possibly the Vader requesting his shuttle and that whole kind of cutscene.
Yes.
It's just like, again, it kind of slightly ruins the pacing. And I don't think at any point I've ever heard anybody kind of be like, well, hang on a sec, Vader was just on Cloud City and now he's on the Star Destroyer. I understand it from a very logical, methodical perspective that actually, yeah, you kind of want to see him request the shuttle, but I don't think you necessarily need to see, like, used scenes from Return of the Jedi.
Especially when you see that shot and you Moff see Jared. Grand Moff Tijerod, and it's like, he should be on the Death Star at this point, building the Death Star, not on the Executor, so why was he there?
And also what happens is you see him goldfishing, which is a term that we use in TV for when somebody is speaking but you can see the mouth moving but you can't actually hear what they're saying. So that to me just sticks out as sort of fun. It's interesting, like what you said earlier about, you know, how the filmmakers used the technology at the time and worked around it with Jaws and films like that. And obviously we see that in The Empire Strikes Back they had to do that with the Wampa, but now we have the option to have a more literal realization of the Wampa. And I think it's cool to see, but also I think it slightly loses the tension by seeing it, in my mind anyway. That's my perspective. So that's not necessarily a bad one. That's just kind of like a in between a good and a bad. I think the one that really annoys me more, it's a change made for the good, and it's a change to make the film's times of prequels a lot more, and that is the new Vader Emperor scene where Vader's communicating with the Emperor. And it's not the fact that it's the inclusion of Ian McDiarmid. I just think the scripting's just a little bit off, and it's a little bit, again, it's a little bit too on the nose. If we take the argument that George wants us to watch episodes 1 through 5, then I don't necessarily think we need to get that extra dialogue about, you know, Anakin and stuff like that in it. How they had worded it originally in The Empire Strikes Back was probably fine as it is, and they could have just re-recorded McDiarmid. I mean, obviously, I know it's a bit of a shame because you do lose a couple of performances by replacing the Emperor, but from the continuity of it all makes sense. You know, the Empire Strikes Back Emperor always just looked a bit odd.
The Emperor scene didn't quite flow, didn't quite work. I know they shot that mid Revenge of the Sith, I think, those scenes that were added. And Hayden shot his scenes for Jedi during the same sort of time period. But Empire, yeah, I like the Wampa stuff, but I get what you're saying. It does, it changes the, you know, by not showing the Wampa and only seeing it as it rushes Luke, you know, there's a kind of a peril to that. But what they did, you know, with Harry Weed in the suit, that was a great little scene. So I did enjoy that. The not an awful lot else added. I mean, I think they tightened up the matte lines on the Snowspeeder battle, but I don't think from memory there's anything
new
added there.
No, they just recomposited stuff, didn't they, really? Did a bit of clean-up and... and that's all kind of good. I mean,
that's what they should
do,
isn't it?
I think that is where what you should be using special editions for, to an extent, is to kind of really just help the aging process a little bit, tidy up where you can, sort out, you know, stray blaster bolts and stuff like that. And because what you could see is you could almost see, like, there's times during the interior cockpit scenes, you could almost see like the frame was transparent, and it's not quite perfect because there's some weird stuff goes on with some of the pilot chest boxes. You see some of the colors change from one scene to another, but that's because they've got blue on the chest box and stuff like that. So that's,
what do you think of that? I mean, as somebody who works with color, do you think the grading's right on Empire? I mean, it shows up the most on Hoth.
Yeah, obviously they cleaned up the prints for special edition. They then kind of regraded it for the 2011 or 2012 version, and then they regraded it again for the later version. And they've kind of, like, the last version was quite a lot more saturated. The trick for making Hoth feel like Hoth is you put a load of blue in the whites, and that automatically makes things feel brighter but also colder. So, I mean, I thought Hoth looked great, really. You know, I think anything to kind of, like, help with the compositing and, you know, removing matte boxes and stuff like that is worth it. I wonder if there's a certain amount of, like, well, you know, the feeling at the time was, would people actually go to the cinema just to see Star Wars again, just looking a little bit newer with new effects, but would we need to really give them a little bit more? I mean, that's why I like the Cloud City stuff, because we know it's CG and we can see that some of these corridors have been kind of removed and they're now almost outside balconies and stuff, but it just feels more natural. I mean, I suppose you've got the extended scene leading into Cloud City as well, don't you?
Yeah, it is lovely, and the scene with the twin pod flying through the city before Leia and Han have their little talk. I mean, I think with Empire, the addition that I didn't like was on the original special edition when Luke fell and he screamed.
Yes, and that's gone.
And
yeah, I
was,
hasn't it?
That's gone by the Blu-ray. Yeah. I always hated that because it always felt like, originally it felt like he drops in silence. It's defiance. He's like, screw you, I'd rather die. But when he falls and screams, it's like, no, suddenly now it's fear and terror. And he's like, that's never how I read it. So when they changed it back, I thought that was a
good
great
show, wasn't it?
To change it and then put it back. Yeah, it was a good decision. Originally in Empire, the scene that you refer to, taking Vader getting back to the Executor, when in the new version it's like, prepare my Star Destroyer for my arrival, and the original was just bring my shuttle, which was like, he's never ever sounded more pissed off than when he says bring my shuttle, and they edited that out, and I hate that they took that away, because then also by making those slight additions, as good as they were visually, him going to the Lambda class shuttle, it looked great. It altered the music beats as well, so the music timing slightly different on the special edition to the original. But, you know, I think Empire's done well. Like you said, changing the windows on Cloud City so you can see the outside. And I think, again, I look at it now and I think, if only they could do it now. They wouldn't have to change much of anything. They keep all the stuff they shot and just recomposite, but it would just look so much nicer now if they could do it.
They have done that for the Disney Plus versions, which we'll talk about after we've spoken about Return of the Jedi.
Hello, I'm Warwick Davis and you're listening to FanthaTracks.
The third episode of the Disney Gallery series dropped on the Disney Plus app, which was to do with the cast of The Mandalorian, or cast, depending on where you hail from in the world. So, have you had a chance to watch it yet, Mark?
I have. I really enjoyed it. It was good. Like you say, I think of the previous two directors and legacy were so impressive. I mean, everyone was raving last week about the whole Filoni speech. And I've noticed this week on social media, and again, shouldn't take any notice of it because it's all just hot air, but some people are getting kind of snotty that people didn't know what Filoni was saying. I don't think anybody didn't get what he was saying. I think it was the way he said it. He so concisely worded it. You could see the other directors looking at him like, wow, I hadn't thought of it like that before. So I don't think it was anything he said was new knowledge. It's just the way he said it. So I noticed a bit of snark about that, which I thought was kind of a bit mean. But this episode, yeah, it was. It was a bit of a love-in. You know, like actors do.
Yes.
You know, Carl Weathers is a ledge anyway, isn't he? We all know it.
Yeah.
Gina Carano is just awesome, and she's so thrown herself into it. And I've liked Pedro Pascal for a good long while. I think he's brilliant, and I think he's almost criminal hiding his face because I think he's one of those watchable actors. But he's got such a great voice. Watching him do the voice work for it, you know, in the room with all the other, you know, with Matt Wood over there and Filoni over there, it was just like, that was very cool.
It's one of those episodes where I think you kind of have to just enjoy the fact that there's chemistry around a table between Gina and Carl and, you know, Pedro and John and Dave and Matt. So that was really nice to kind of see. Like you said, it kind of was reminiscent to the J.J. Abrams' Force Awakens commentary where everybody was great and did a wonderful job and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But that's fine. For instance, you've got Gina, who is fairly inexperienced from an acting perspective, but was really getting the character. And then you had Carl, who is, you know, a seasoned veteran. You got two different takes. And I think also you got two different approaches to the craft of acting, which I think was quite interesting. And it was fun. Lots of little kind of like fun stories and stuff to be had. So it was nice. I do think that some people, when they were saying that about Dave, was, yeah, he hasn't kind of presented a new theory, but what he's done is he's concisely worded it in a way that just makes sense and makes the average person who probably has never thought about this stuff kind of go, oh, actually, hang on a sec, that makes a lot of sense and that's really clever. And I think if we take the actual, what he was saying to one side and actually just go, well, look, this just shows the kind of thought that actually sometimes does go into making these films. And it's not just about making a blockbuster, and it's not just about chucking a load of CG on the screen and making models and armor. Actually, there's a thought behind it. So this one, it was good. Good fun. Quite nice. A little bit shorter than the others. I think for me, like I said before, I'm always fascinated, obviously, with the process of, like, you know, special effects, of CGI, the model making and stuff like that. So I'm hoping we're going to get an episode that really focuses on the stagecraft technology that they use, and even Baby Yoda. And I would imagine maybe they're keeping the Baby Yoda puppet episode, maybe for episode 8. I don't know. Kind of keep him as, like, the big kind of, like, finale, shall we say.
I'm glad you said that, because over the last week, I had the chance to sit down with a guy from ILM and record a good two-hour conversation. 1 hour of that is going to be split over three episodes, talking about his career at ILM since 1997 and his time at Pixar before that. And then we're going to put out a special episode that's a good hour long, where he will be talking about his Star Wars experiences, his work on the prequels, on Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, Rogue One, and The Mandalorian. That person is Hal Hickel. You will have seen him on episode 2 of Disney Gallery and The Round Table, talking to Favreau and the rest of the team. And we were very lucky to get some time with him. So starting next episode, so that's a week today, first part of our chat with Hal across the next three episodes, and then a special episode of Making Tracks where we speak specifically and only about his Star Wars contributions, and that means we get to talk about his work on The Mandalorian.
Looking forward to it.
Hi, this is Dave Chapman, and you're listening to Fantatrax.
Well, Return of the Jedi, there's quite a few bits added to Jedi. I mean, again, final one, Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. What do you think about Jedi?
Don't mind Jedi rocks, if I'm honest. Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit out there in terms of a comic kindness of the animated characters, but, I mean, it's quite cool. I quite like that as a track anyway. It's got a good groove to it. The extended bit with Ula, that's fun and nice. And I'm not a huge fan of the later edition of extending Jabba's door. I just don't feel like that was really, again, warranted. I think that was done for the Blu-rays, similarly to the rocks in A New Hope. But I think it kind of works better than the change in A New Hope. The biggest one that I still struggle with is I don't like the addition of a nose at the end of the scene with Vader, the Emperor, and Luke right at the end of the film. I don't know if it's partly because it sounds like it's just outtakes from the no from Revenge of the Sith, which I think it was, but I just think the scene just works so much stronger when there's just no dialogue there.
Definitely agree with that.
I think the biggest controversial one isn't the blinking Ewoks, but it's close. It's the inclusion of Hayden Christensen as Anakin. I kind of see both sides. It doesn't really bother me. I think how they've had to explain it is a slight stretch, but it is what it is. It does help tie the prequel trilogy into the original trilogy. And so you can kind of understand it. Pretty sure there's conversations that he had with himself where he was just kind of thinking, how can we try and homogenize these two different trilogies into the saga that I clearly want? We know that he likes to do this tone poem and mirroring and stuff like that. And so you can understand some of his changes from that perspective. It's just whether or not actually that as a justification is worth actually making the changes to the films. So what about you? What did you think?
I prefer Latinette to Jedi Rocks, but I don't dislike Jedi Rocks. And I did enjoy the animated stuff that they added to that. So that was fine. I was cool with that. Totally agree about the door. No need for that. No need at all. Even though it was well done, it was very well done.
It's one of those things. It's just like, and I think this is where it's really, really hard to tell. It's like, actually, if you were to play that film to somebody who has never seen it, whether or not that jumps out, whether or not they just kind of just think it's just a big door. And if it's just one of those things where, because we're so overly precious with these films, because what they mean to us, that's why it feels like such a, I don't want to say violation, because that's really hyperbolic. But they struck such a strong nerve.
They didn't add an awful lot to the Death Star battle because they didn't need to. But I think the big one is the one, like you say, right at the end, Hayden Ghost, or Hayden Anakin as opposed to Sebastian Shaw Anakin. For me, I've got no problem with it, because in my head I'm thinking, well, the Anakin that you saw Sebastian Shaw appear as at the end never existed in reality. There was never an old man who'd been in that armour pre-lava who looked anything like that. So the Sebastian Shaw Anakin you see at the end never physically existed. The Anakin Skywalker you saw at the end of Return of the Jedi Special Edition, we saw him looking like that, known as Darth Vader. He existed. Yeah. And was redeemed minutes before. So the last time Anakin Skywalker existed, essentially, before he went into the lava on Mustafar,
was a young
that's
Jedi.
What he looked like. Yeah. He's the young Jedi. So for me, thematically and logically, and also in the sense of tying it all up, that actually works. And we also saw Sebastian Shaw as Darth Vader, stroke Anakin Skywalker now, after everything he's been through with the helmet off with Luke. That's the big moment. So to lose him at the end, just with Yoda and Ben at the end, is understandable. I get why people don't like it, but for me, logically, it makes way more sense to see him look like Hayden. But of course, Hayden wasn't even born when Jedi came out.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it couldn't be done.
Hi, Paul Blake here, Greedo from Star Wars A New Hope, and you're listening to Fantha Tracks.
You mentioned Disney Plus. There's been some tweaks and changes.
Well, yeah,
there.
So A New Hope, there's the McClunky edit. Have you seen that?
I interviewed Paul Blake, and it's on Fantha Tracks. Just do a search for Paul Blake, you'll find it. And he actually mentioned McClunky, and he didn't remember recording it, but I think if I remember from the interview, he thinks that it was probably a line of audio that he did way back when that never got used. So he thinks that he recorded that back in the 70s.
Right, yeah.
It's not a newly recorded, as far as he understands it. He certainly didn't record it.
From what I understand it, it's the last scrapings of dialogue.
It's the last thing George worked on before he sold
the company. So basically what happened was, they'd re-scanned the films to 4K to help with the 3D conversions. And obviously what they have done is they've done, again, some tweaks to the compositing and some cleanup on some of that as well, which is never going to be a bad thing, I don't really think. Disney have released an HDR version for Disney Plus, which is not, again, a bad thing. But they've changed the grade on all three films. They've regraded it.
Okay.
And the grade, to me, personally, as a colourist, I do slightly struggle with. I've done some side-by-sides, and it's a lot more muted. It works in some scenes, and in others it doesn't. It makes Princess Leia's white dress more beigey. Just the overall tone is a lot more warmer. Everything's a little bit more cinematic, and cinema has kind of like a slightly more warmer kind of colour temperature. But what that means is that Hoth doesn't particularly feel as cold, because, like I said, in the regraded versions, they kind of added a lot of blue in, and it kind of felt quite cold. The skin tones feel a lot more natural, but they smoothed them out a little bit, and I think this is partly a problem with the HDR version that has been made. But because you tend to make the HDR version first, and then you can make the standard dynamic range, which is what most people will view from that. And I think it might have been something that's happened in that process. So I kind of watched it, and it kind of just felt a little bit muted overall. And I think it kind of aged the film, which is bizarre because I spent all this time cleaning up the pictures. And so you've got these beautiful 4K images, which don't have any grain or dirt in it. But yet it just feels older than actually the 40 years that it is, which is bizarre. It's just one of those weird things. It doesn't quite work. But then actually it kind of now slightly sits in closer with the cinematic look and feel of the sequel trilogy and stuff like The Mandalorian, because you see how The Mandalorian's quite muted from a colour palette perspective. Yeah. That's kind of a similar kind of thing. So I'm kind of slightly on the fence about it, and I'm not 100% sure from what I understand if George had any involvement in the grade, whereas in the regrade from 2011, it wasn't just done in a couple of days. It was weeks and weeks and weeks of regrading and discussing and stuff like that. And it was kind of George's creative input. This, I would probably guess, and might have actually not have happened part of the work that he did before he sold it. And this is obviously something that's happened since Disney have picked up and done the HDR versions. But hey, if anybody knows anything more about it, please write in, because I'd be curious to either be corrected or find out more about it.
Okay, that's all we've got for episode 38 of Making Tracks. If you want to be part of the action and stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news, visit fantatracks.com or check out the Fantatracks app through the App Store to follow us on your mobile device. You can reach out to us and send in your listeners' questions by emailing radio@fantatracks.com. Now, as you heard in this episode, Tony from Hull sent in a question that's taken us the whole episode to answer. That's absolutely fine. So send us in your big questions, send us in your little questions, comment, like and share on any of our social media feeds at Fantatracks, and be sure to subscribe, leave a review, preferably a 5-star one please, on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher or smart speaker of choice. That's all for this episode. Mark, thank you again for rambling on about Star Wars.
You're welcome. We do that pretty well, I think, you know.
Yeah,
why not? Let's do it again next week.
We're getting there. Everybody, yeah. Stay safe, and we'll speak to you next time.
Take care.
Coming up next on Fantatracks Radio, it's another episode of Making Tracks.